Some of you might have noticed that I'm wearing my family tartan stole again. I usually only wear it for our Reformation Kirking of the Tartan service, but I thought it would be appropriate today, too. Through my dad's mother, I'm part of the Carmichael clan, and a few weeks ago at the Stone Mountain Highland Games, my almost 7-year-old was very proud to get a pin with our family crest on it. And around the depiction of a hand raising a broken spear are the words in Old French, toujours prêt, which loosely translates to always ready. It seems like a pretty fitting motto for my dad's side of the family. Jackson was also proud to make another connection. As a new Cub Scout, he knows that the Scout motto is be prepared. So always ready, be prepared. Pretty good rules for life. There's certainly values that are prized in our culture. It's good to be prepared, to be ready. It's good to have a savings account and life insurance. Planning and forethought and preparation are practically worshipped in our culture. And it seems like when something goes wrong, we often try to look back and figure out what could have been done differently, believing that better planning or preparation could have avoided the problem. That is part of our broader culture, it is part of our Reformed tradition, and it is certainly part of my family of origin. So I must admit that this parable that Jesus tells about the foolish and wise bridesmaids speaks to me. Now don't get me started on why the bridegroom was late to his own wedding. But you gotta wonder, what's the big idea with those 5 foolish bridesmaids bringing their lamps but no extra oil? But really, is that what this parable is about? Is Jesus' message the same as an insurance agent, my Carmichael clan, or the Boy Scouts? It sounds simple enough. Be prepared, hang on to your own oil, don't share because only a fool gives it away. And certainly that can't be what the gospel message is about. This parable contains a number of features that make for an awkward story. The long delay of the bridegroom, his arrival at such a late hour, the notion that shops from which to buy lamp oil would be open at midnight, the unwillingness of the wise maidens to share their oil with the foolish, and the concluding injunction to keep awake. When the flaw of the foolish maidens was not that they had slept, but that they had failed to prepare. This watchfulness and preparation are lifted up in this parable, but they're not just about sitting by a window waiting for something to happen or doomsday hoarding. What matters here is doing God's will because we take seriously God and trust that God's kingdom will come. The chapter just prior to this parable in Matthew is all about the end of the age. It described with foretelling of the destruction of the temple and persecutions, telling of the coming of the Son of Man and the lesson of the fig tree. So after all that talk about what the end time will be like, the question before the disciples was, how to live until the end of the age? The question for them and for us is, what does it mean to act like the wise bridesmaids? So here are a few things it does not mean. It is not just about constant alertness, because all 10 of the bridesmaids slept, but only 5 were called foolish. It's not just about waiting patiently. The story doesn't tell us about the right kind of attitude to have while sitting around waiting. It's not just about being excited when news of the bridegroom's return reaches us. It's not about distinguishing between those who know the bridegroom and those who do not. This isn't a lesson on insiders and outsiders. It's not about bringing all the necessary resources or everyone bringing lamps. The claim here about anticipating the bridegroom's great wedding banquet doesn't negate the grace-shaped joy of a feast in which the host brings and shares all that we will actually need. So what does it mean to act like a wise bridesmaid? It appears that the only difference between the 2 groups of women is that the wise prepared for the wait And the foolish ended up looking for a 24-hour convenience store that sells lamp oil. What does it look like to be a wise bridesmaid? It doesn't look like being a prepper, stockpiling weapons, canned goods, or canned answers. Being admitted into the great wedding banquet isn't about what we presume to know or possess. Rather, it asks us to prepare to wait and to avoid assuming that we have enough knowledge, faith, love in our lamps right now. The parable reminds us that this is not as good as it gets. The delay of the bridegroom does not mean that he will not come. It reminds us that the party won't start until he arrives. And so the text asks us to live in hope for what has been promised and what will be, but is not yet. As Professor Mark Douglas puts it, the text reminds us that knowledge, faith, and love are tools for living in the time before eternity, not tools to gain entrance into it. So what does it mean to act like the wise bridesmaids as we live on this side of eternity, in the already but not yet time? Well, we can gather with others who are waiting, and we can stick with them. We can avoid communities that are so caught up in prognosticating that they forget about living in hope now. While it is wise to fill our lamps with good things, we should remember that those things are for use on this side of eternity. There's already more than enough light at the banquet. Our mission now, living into this promised hope, is to live faithfully, courageously, and hopefully. Our Christian hope is rooted in the trust that the God who created the world will continue to love the world with gentle providence, will continue the process of creation until the project is complete, and will continue to redeem and save the world by coming into it with love and grace in Jesus Christ. This hope is for all who are genuinely concerned about where human history seems to be headed, which I sure hope means it is for all of us. Freedom, justice, and compassion seem fragile in the face of oppression, injustice, and violence. This parable is about living in hope. But contrary to popular belief, living in hope does not mean we are immune to the harsh reality of the world. What it does mean is living confidently and expectantly. What it does mean is trusting the God of compassion, redemption, and hope. There is much of which to be afraid, and we need the good news that the bridegroom is coming, and that the love of God will continue to appear in our lives in surprising and unexpected ways. Because God's love does come now. Christ comes when Christian people live in hope and refuse to give up. Christ comes each time a faithful disciple expresses love and compassion and works for justice. Christ comes when critically ill people know they are ultimately safe in God's love. Christ comes. Heaven breaks into earth when faithful women and men live in hope and give themselves to the work of the kingdom. See, this parable isn't just for those people listening to Jesus way back then. It isn't just for those in the early church who couldn't figure out why he hadn't returned yet. It isn't a primer on prepping for the fiery end. This is a parable for us, for living in hope now. So what does it mean to live like the wise bridesmaids? It means living in hope, confident of God's promises. It means preparing with responsible deeds of discipleship, works of love and mercy, hearing Jesus' teachings and acting on them. Then our lamps shine with the light of love and mercy, giving glory to God. To live like the wise bridesmaids is to live faithfully, courageously, and hopefully. The wise bridesmaids, have not relinquished the hope that the world and each one of us will one day be transformed and fully reconciled to God. The wise, with the Spirit's guidance, build discipline into their lives and habits of a lifetime that provoke hope and empower living as if citizens of the kingdom of heaven. In his Sermon on the Mount, Jesus teaches, "Let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your God." That's what living like the wise bridesmaids looks like, living in hope and letting the light shine. In this story, Jesus tells us we don't ever find out what is behind the reasons that those five women did not bring oil, or why the five did. We don't know if the wise ones were down to their last flask of oil, and the foolish ones left barrels of the stuff back home. Jesus doesn't tell any of us that. We don't learn about their motives or extenuating circumstances. Perhaps he doesn't tell us because that part doesn't matter. What matters is not how much oil we have, but about the oil we bring with us. All 10 bridesmaids brought their lamps. Only half of them brought an extra flask of oil with them. So what about the oil that we bring with us? And what happens when we run out of oil? When we do, our lamps are empty and our light cannot shine. I imagine we can all think of times when our lamps have run dry, when we've been unable to make that light shine, when the baby missed his nap and the big kids don't want to do their homework and everybody is hungry, when you've tried every reasonable method for communicating with someone and they still don't get it and you just blow your top, when the only conversations you've had with your spouse in weeks have been about carpool logistics and play practice schedules, when you've lost track of how many 80-hour work weeks you've had and you can't remember the last time you just put your feet up and read a good book, when you seem to move from one friend or family member's health crisis to the next at the expense of your own self-care, that's when your lamp has run dry and your light cannot shine. So it matters what you bring with you. We cannot live into hope, confident of God's promises, when our lamps are empty. I don't think Jesus told this parable to turn us into Boy Scouts or preppers or to scare his listeners straight. Anna Carter Florence says, "You don't fill your lamp because you're afraid you're going to get locked out of the kingdom of heaven. You don't stockpile oil because you can turn everyone else away and that's so much fun. No, you just stop at the filling station and fill your flask and take it with you because you've got kingdom work to do that needs light and you can't wait to meet the bridegroom. You fill it out of joy. That's the only price of oil when you think about it. The desire to meet Jesus when he comes, which he will, soon, very soon. Amen."